Welcome along to the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with William Hill. Thanks very much for listening once again. Simon Ferry's not here. He is over in Dublin on a Christmas weekend out, and our two guests that have joined us today, I'm sure, would have had a few decent Christmas weekends under their belts. I'm delighted to say that we're joined by the former Rangers midfielder Alex Ray and the former Hibernian midfielder Davy Farrell, both of course very good friends, managerial double act at St Mirren and Dundee, coaching staff at MK Dons in Notts County under Paul Ince, so plenty of experience, plenty of patter, plenty of banter, and I'm sure the next 30 or 40 minutes you'll enjoy listening to. Alec, Davy, welcome along.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mark.
You need to make it 30 minutes. I'm just putting that straight. And I usually put enough money in the meter.
Can I just add to that?
We'll pick up the tartan ticket.
For once, he picked up the tab.
I know. I couldn't believe that, actually. We're looking at the window there.
All habits die hard.
We couldn't believe it. He protected paying 10 pences, didn't he? Anyway, we're Christmas schedule. We're in Christmas week. And you look at clubs, you see some managers cancelling the Christmas parties if they're not doing well. Other ones, as we know, are away. They're living it up, whether it's a night out or a weekend away. When you look at the schedule, you know, it's great for football fans because it's wall-to-wall, it's day after day. But in terms of if you think back to your playing careers, did you have the same enthusiasm for Christmas? Or, Davy, was it a bit of a hindrance in terms of the schedule getting in the way of the social aspect?
No, I certainly found it enjoyable. I think most players just look forward to it. It's a very busy time. Everybody loves playing much more than they enjoy training anyway. So to that extent, it's perfect. I certainly don't remember any Christmas night suit that ever impacted on training or games or anything like that. But no, I think most people enjoyed it because for players, it's just another working week.
Mm-hmm. Alec, what about yourself?
No, I always remember Christmas a bit of a nightmare, actually, with, you know, training Christmas Day. And then because of the clubs I played on, if I would have been at Millwall, I'd had to travel up north, you know, and it's a trek, maybe 4 hours after your Christmas dinner. And then when I was at Sunderland, it was a similar scenario. But latterly, when I was at Sunderland with a few quid, we were flying to games, which was definitely the business. But
didn't look forward to that, though.
But the great thing about it all was we had a tremendous culture at Sunderland for having Christmas parties and things, fancy dress. I remember going as Madonna one night, and I had the three-quarter length sequins miniskirt on, Mark. It was right up your street, and I've got the Madonna mask on, and within an hour of being out and about in the town, I'd lost the mask. So I was worried I was born about with a pair of stilettos and a miniskirt in Sunderland. It wasn't a pretty sight.
Did you choose Madonna, or was it a lucky
No, it was just every year I always done up a different female, and that year it was Madonna.
It's a common theme, actually, and particularly in the clubs that I've been at as well, although I was never doing in England for Christmas night suit or anything like that. So that never really impacted us as much, because we would just train in the morning and then we'd be travelling for the game in the next day. It was no problem. But you used to bump into all sorts of sights, because all the Christmas night suit tended to be at the same time of the year, because everybody would pick the Sunday after the game, the Saturday game before Christmas or something like that, and it would be fancy dress most clubs would have, so you'd have all sorts of guys. You'd be bumping into Mark Haley dressed up as a penguin and all the kind of crazy stuff that happened. You know, we had bad taste, we had 70s, and that was what it was like at that time. Brilliant.
Is that not just Big Mark's normal gear?
Why the football clubs got any other works night out, you just go pair of jeans, shirt, away and have a few bevies and a bite to eat. Why do the footballers go for this fancy dress?
I think purely for the point of view is they just want to have a laugh. You know, and the more outrageous the outfit, the better it is for the boys. You know, some of the outfits now you wouldn't even get away with because of the old PC brigade. You know,
I think it's because they didn't really go out that often, so it was that one night out.
He said that with a straight face.
That one night out a year we used to go mad, you know.
What about managers? When it got to, like, maybe try to sneak Christmas morning off or whatever it was to spend with the family, what managers kind of tended to look after you and could see the angle, and with the managers you played under that just said, no chance, we're in, and that's it?
I remember that almost every manager I played under, certainly when we were full time, was Christmas Day was just a training day, and that was it. I remember maybe my whole career of 18 years missing training twice, probably. It was just a done thing. You know, you just trained because generally you had a game on Boxing Day, so you trained. Very, very few managers I ever played under gave us Christmas Day off.
How did that go down with the family, the kids that, you know,
I think that you just get used to it, don't you? It just becomes part of what the game is and part of what you are.
I never had my kids till later on in life, so it didn't really impact him. I think latterly it starts getting you, you know, what it's all about, the Christmas feeling or that, and you know, you appreciate it more now because my kids are relatively young. So, but going back to the days, it was, see, when you're a professional, Mark, I think it's actually, when you take it, you have no reservations about coming in the Christmas morning. And see, the thing is, if someone had said to me, you're taking the day off, mentally in my head wouldn't have been right for the game, because I would have been thinking to myself, we've not prepared properly here. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, I think that was a big thing. I think that was the main factor of it, you know, that the mental side of it, that if you did have that day off, all of a sudden you've switched off, mm-hmm. you're no then prepared fully, exactly as Alex says.
Do you know, sorry, just to butt in there, do you know the actual interesting thing about this whole thing, and I'll tell you about the thing about Faz and myself, there's been like family funerals that we've missed because of that mentality that he spoke about there. I've known David for since we were wee boys, and that's the thing, you know, you're going to family funerals, if it was impacting on your training schedule, you wouldn't go. So, you know, and you think to yourself, when you actually step back and think about that for a minute, you go, wait a minute.
But you were actually, you've missed them just for the sake of a training session.
Aye, purely because of the mental side, that you didn't want to be seen to miss it, you didn't want the manager to an excuse to put you at the team. And that was a fear factor that kind of went about in them days. And we've said it often, haven't we?
Changed
over
now.
the years.
I was going to say that, well, since you've become managers and coaches, you've been involved in management and coaching for 12, 14 years now. Would you get players now coming saying, oh, can we get Christmas morning off Gaffer? I've got a funeral to go to. Yeah.
Not just Christmas morning. A lot of times you would have players coming with all sorts of strange excuses for days off, and him and I used to look at each other when I would come in and go, come on,
give us an answer.
One of the ones where you would go, I went to your manager in those days and said, can I have a day off because my missus is graduating?
Yeah.
You know, well, to give you an example.
Have you just threw that one in? Who said that?
Do you not remember?
Of course I did.
Was that Dundee, St Mirren?
St Mirren.
Try to think.
Oh, brilliant. Anyway, but the thing is, like Faz says, see, when you start using things like that, days off for to my wife's graduation and the dentist and things, that would never even have come into our mindset. There was no way, and you know what the response would have been, is that right? Make an appointment for the afternoon.
I was going to say that because you would know, exactly. If you're dentist, I'm working, there's no way.
That's a different mentality. The player nowadays has a different mentality, there's no doubt about it.
In terms of just going back to when you were a player, or even in management as well, any particular festive periods that stick out for you either in a positive or a negative way, where you thought we went on a right good wee run over that 10-day, 14-day period or not?
Oh, listen, when I was at Sunderland, we had an unbelievable, I think we were third getting into January, which was a phenomenal run. And as it's actually, particularly down south, that period is always defines how your season's going to go. You know, if you've had a bit of a nightmare, you're getting into a new year on a low. And it was important to actually go in on a high.
It was a wee bit of the opposite, actually, with us with Hibs. We used to start the season really, really well. We'd always flying at the start of the season. And we would hit that December, mid-December time. And before you know it, you know, you'd win 8 or 9 games without a win right through Christmas and New Year. And by January, you were starting to say, when can we get back to winning again? I don't know what the reason for it was or what any rhyme or reason in particular, but it seemed to happen all the time with us.
Was that with Alec Mills?
Yeah,
because we always started quite, really well. Steady Eddies under Alec Mills.
Good steady performances at league level and then cups and things like that. And we started this year. I remember going to Motherwell one time, and it was, in fact, it was around about my birthday, so it was end of October, start of November. And we drew 0-0, I think it was on a Friday night, one of the live Sky games at that time, and that allowed us to stay top of the league. So that was, you know, that shows you how we were doing at that time. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden we would get to December and it just used to seem to go downhill for some reason.
Christmas party started early.
Fancy dress killed it.
how did that go down? A boy for Denison dressed up as Madonna.
Oh, do you know what
was the first time?
No, listen, I've got to be honest with you. It was every year I went to a Christmas party. I scored my first hat trick in Notts County. And we had a Christmas party uptown. We were at the hotel. We get kicked out of the hotel at 2 a.m. And we were going back to a little watering hole along the Old Kent Road, and we see Thomas A. Beckett just turn right. My wife was driving that night. And as we turned right, the police were there. And I thought, leave it to me, I'll get out here. And there's two coppers jumping out of the car. Can you get back in the car, madam? Right. And then they realised it was me. And both of them were Millwall fans. And I'm going, I can't believe we're heroes sitting there with suspenders done it on. But, you know, you couldn't make it up. Every year.
Right. We'll move on. The next subject we want to touch on is youth football, mate. And we have touched on it a wee bit there in terms of the mentality of younger players and younger pros coming through. the ranks. But I just want to read out a quote here that's been recently made by Jose Mourinho. And the quote is, "I had to understand the difference between working with a boy like Frank Lampard, who at the age of 23 was already a man, who thought football work professionalism, and the new boys now, who at the age of 23 are merely kids. Today I call them boys, not men, because I think that they are brats and everything that surrounds them does not help them in their life, nor in my work." So, first of all, just to look at that quote, can you see exactly where Mourinho's coming from?
It's one of your pet hates. The Boffies are always talking about this. There was a thing doing a rounds with Jose, with Pep Guardiola recently. He says, "Is your kids ready to step up?" And he went, "They're miles away." Similar to what Josie's talking about there. I went to see one of the directors at St Mirren about the appointment of the new director of football. Davey Longwell had left to go to America. And I said to Faz, I would love to have an input. When you consider the wealth of knowledge that Faz and myself have over the course of hundreds and hundreds of games, and then you're into the coaching side of things. We've been at that for about 10 years now. So you take all the elements, and I went to see this director and says, I would like an input of how the kids are being taught. And to my surprise, he says, you won't be having any. And I didn't want to have an impact on the appointment anyway. I just wanted to get an understanding of how he was going to approach things, the new guy. And he says to me, listen, you won't be having any party. He'll be here longer than you. And you're thinking, what a response.
That was his answer.
That was his answer. So, which turned out to be true, but why would you not take somebody's advice? With the greatest respect to all these guys on the board, they had all been successful businessmen. But when it comes to having an understanding of the game, and as I said, by the way, I've spoken to you 100 times about the way the game's going for kids, and Faz is the same. Now, there's a boy I watched last week, Cochrane, a very kind of get a wee bit of everything, put his foot in, passing. He scored a goal yesterday against Celtic, and you see wee ingredients of him that is kind of being lost. A lot of them are very good at kind of bombing forward, but don't do the nitty gritty side of tracking back, or they're not giving them the full package, the whole ingredients to be a top footballer. And that's the reason why they're getting to 23 and they maybe only played a certain amount of games, you know. Whereas when I was 23, as an example, I went through the apprenticeship, 17 to 20, I had 100 games, league games under my belt. The next 3 years would be about another 100, 150 games. So you have 250 games under your belt. By the time you're talking about Mourinho, talking about a 23, 24-year-old. So when you take all that into consideration, you have to think about what it actually required to actually make it at a very good level. And it has been missing a trick. But Fazzo,
tell us your side of it, Faz.
It exasperates me, to be honest with you. I watch our kids these days, and it's that, you know, the toilet bag culture, where they've got the Louis Vuitton stuff and all the fancy Dan and the boots and the colour and the hair and all the rest of it. And they actually don't know what it takes to be a football player. They're being taught how to play football. They're being taught how to do all the nice skills and all the development stuff and lovely football and passing it out at the back. And we all want to see that. We all want to see how good we can be technically. But as a nation, we don't compete at a technical level. So we can teach them to be as good as they can at that level. But they then need more than that to be competitive. In Scotland, we were competitive 20, 25 years ago when we had technical ability and we had the fight and we had the mentality. Our players now are grown up as technicians, not as fighters. And because of that, they're not able to compete at the same level because everybody else is technically better. So we used to be able to equalise that with the rest, with the other stuff that they're not now getting taught at youth level, at development level, from the age of 5 to the age of 21. They're not seeing any of it. We've got guys who, and I don't want to be disrespectful to Graham Murty, who's in the Rangers manager's job, who's telling us that when they played against Dumbarton in a youth game, in one of those Iron Brew Cup ties, mm-hmm. where it was the men against boys earlier scenario this earlier this yeah. season, coming out after the game and saying they were going to have to integrate winning second balls into training.
20
for
years
guys
of age?
Who are 20 years of age. Now, him and I used to play in school playgrounds, used to play in the streets, and I'm not trying to go back to that old school stuff, But it's the mentality that was developed at that time of winning second balls because you didn't want him to win it. You didn't want him to win it. They're not being taught that now. And unfortunately, a lot of the coaches at youth level can't see it either. They actually can't see what these young players are missing. Because they think by teaching them lovely football, great passing, lovely wee drills, and it's all set up in lovely cones and markers and bibs, that's no on the pitch. And when they come to learning against men, all of a sudden it's too late.
So they're not getting the survival skills either.
They're not getting the survival skills. They're not learning how to actually be a football player. Mm-hmm. They're not learning how to put themselves in front of the ball. They're not learning how to use their body. They're not learning how to block a centre-back and get in front of him. They're not learning, as a centre-back, stopping that guy from getting in front of you by putting your arm across him, by blocking him, by doing all the wee dirty things that actually take you to the next level. Mm-hmm. Now, and I don't want that to be misinterpreted as us being the dinosaurs of, you know, don't let the boys play football. It's, you know, we don't want to go back to this old school and all that. But unfortunately, some of the ingredients are now missing in our game.
But they're key ingredients. They're the main ones.
It's the ingredients that make us competitive as a nation. Mm-hmm. And we've lost it.
So where does that fall into in terms of, I mean, I know we hear a lot of people, their generation will say, oh, get them back in the proper, the old school ground staff, cleaning the boots, getting the kit. Like, is that a part of, is that a part of that wee bit where you have to work to get to the next level? Or do you think that we don't need that anymore?
But Mark, it's not just about doing the jobs. There's a process in these days. So when as an example, when I went to Ibrox, you go to the away dressing room. Then when you come up to the home dressing room, you have to chat to get in. So there's a respect thing there. And all the while, every time you're walking along that corridor, you're thinking to yourself, what have I got today to get in that dressing room? Mm-hmm. So there's a kind of a process there. Yeah. And part of the problem, that what's happened is, because I've been training at Murray Park since they were 9 to 18, they think they're Rangers players, yet they haven't played any first team games. So the mentality, so how do you get from, I need to get in there? And it's just about earning that right. You know, the jobs gave you character and things, and it was a tough environment. We were all in a similar environment. You get older pros, and
there's no desire among the younger players to be that guy who wants to get in that first team dressing room. Mm-hmm. You know, who doesn't want to have to chat the door, who actually wants to say, "I'm going to be there. Yeah. I'm going to be there." Aye, you earn the right to train with the first team initially. You know, there'd be occasions where you'd maybe have a practice match or something like that, and one of the reserves or two of the reserves would get pulled over. But it wasn't just the two guys that played at right back because they're right back. It was the two guys that was doing all right. Mm-hmm. It was the two guys that wanted it a wee bit
like
more. Two guys with a bit of desire got to come and train with the first team because they were two players short. Mm-hmm. And that then gave you that wee bit of belief and desire to say, I'm going to be that guy next.
See, when you're talking about, you know, the kids walking about the toilet bag culture, that kind of thing, but is that just now, because we're all parents as well, is that just now society in general, or is that making too much of a generalisation?
Well, there's an interesting part of it, but the thing is, there's one for you. You look at the Motherwell producing kids, Hamilton producing kids, and they must be doing something right. You know, you look at some of the clubs that are actually get good principles about them and things. So
it's part of it, but we need to get away from it at a basic football level, because we're not teaching them the right things by giving them everything on a plate when it comes to them training. They walk in the door, and it's like, as he says, there's no desire to go and chat the door. You respect. You walk in that door and you get something through you, and you walk back out the door again because you hadn't chapped.
Can I
do wee things like that? You know,
Mark. See, my first week at Rangers, and this is to go back to the old days. And I went in on Monday morning to start training. Some of my heroes: David Cooper, Ferguson, Durant. You know, just, you know, they two are my heroes. They were scudding guys with kebabs and everything, and I thought, these guys are for me. And in the Friday, you used to get a big wheelbarrow, and you used to have the dryers, you know, the big pipes, and you used to have the same kit for a week. So think about that for a moment. You know, the Rangers players, Derek Johnson, David Cooper, and all these guys, same kit, and you're trying to go in. I just walked in and started picking up the kit. Big Ted McMahon just leathered me. Woof. Bosh right in the ribs, right? I was killed off my breath, and I looked around and everybody's laughing at me. I'm trying not to greet. And that was my introduction to Rangers in my first week. And I thought, and he says to me, get outside and knock to get in here. And that was my introduction. And I knocked, and he said to us, who is it? And I went, it's me. And he went, get Tiff. So that was my introduction, and all the boys are laughing. And you're thinking, what do you do? Do you sink or swim? Uh-huh. You go back in, you chat the door, somebody gives you a nod, and you go in and get the gear. And that was your introduction. And that's that character building. Because you've got a choice then. You say, what did I do here? You know, these guys, you're looking up to them, you're heroes. And then it's about how you apply yourself to try and, as Faz said, because in their days it was a case of, I need to try my best to just even get a wee, even in the shape on a Friday, just to try and get in amongst. So they might see something that, that picks up their eye.
That one where you always felt as though if you got that wee nod to get into the first team training, that was your opportunity to show that you had more than the other guy that's over there.
Yeah.
And you go back again the next time. Uh-huh. And we've lost that.
Mark, see, just to add to this, by the way, it's all in taxi for Farrell. Yeah, it's a Christmas stocking filler for
there. We'll get to that. Seeing that you're talking about, because like you were saying there, Dave, about the survival skills and you're holding your player off, using your body. So how much have we got to get instill that into our own coaches? Yes, the technical ability, of course, but we need to re-educate our coaches to make sure that
absolutely. It's part of the problem. I banged on about it for a long, long time. We got into a situation in Scotland where there was no money for youth coaches. They couldn't employ all the guys that were ex-players. They couldn't get the guys that knew the game. So what happened was they ended up bringing in a lot of young, really young coaches, young guys who generally didn't know the game. You can go to coaching courses and put on wee drills and things like that, but they actually didn't know the game. But they were happy to be involved in it because they were maybe getting 30, 40 quid a week expenses. But they had the badge and the tracksuit that said, I coach for Arbroath, I coach for Hamilton, whatever it was. In all honesty, they weren't the really coaches for Hamilton. They were filling a tracksuit. They weren't doing that kind of... And by the way, I don't mean to be disrespectful to Hamilton. That was an example of a club who they do it right. Mm-hmm. But there are too many of the guys now have developed themselves into being coaches at first team level and coaches in the game and don't know the game. They actually don't know the game. And they're no teaching. We had a discussion about it yesterday. The young lad, Harry Cochrane, who I believe was released for Rangers.
Right?
Yeah. I'm led to believe he was on the books and he's not there now at 16. So
more will be revealed. Why has he been missed? Mm-hmm. Is there people in there that's no seen what he's had? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's the same at all the other clubs because they're all missing the skills that can show these young players how to take it for being so good and so technical with all the other stuff. Because the coaches can't see it. A lot of them can't see it.
Just on Harry Cochrane, how pleased is it to see a young Scottish lad, and credit as well to Craig Levine, the staff, for putting him in, and young Anthony McDonald too, but for Cochrane to hold his own and score
unbelievable.
A lovely goal with his left foot yesterday.
Mark, I seen him last Tuesday. I was doing a wee bit for the radio and I said, this kid's brilliant, you know, and he came on as a sub that day and he was doing the right things, but it catches your eyes. See what we're talking about and say, but getting tight, no letting him turn, no diving in, all the kind of the small ingredients, you think, oh, he ain't bad. He had a good range of passing. And then obviously he's added to that with a goal yesterday against a very, very senior. Now, if I would have been playing yesterday, the first thing I'd have done, I'd have brought up and started some verbals with that boy right away. Yeah. Just right, if I was Scott Brown, I don't know if there was any, but I would have been up going, you're getting copped. Mm-hmm. You know, just to try and get in the boy's head, just to try and give him that education. And it's only through playing at that level that you will get that kind of wee bit of understanding. Oh, aye, he fancies it. And there is mind games and sledging in sport. So I would have done all that yesterday and maybe try to lay one on Melly Doors just to see if he'd have come back. And when I was 16, I made my debut for Rangers Reserves against Aberdeen. And Drew Jarvie volleyed me and he got booked. I was only 16. It was only about 9 stone at the time. I remember looking up and thinking, I'm going to have this old so-and-so. And I met Drew Jarvie 2 years ago. And he's because you're looking through a 16-year-old eyes, you have him as a big giant of a man. And he wasn't. No. You know, I'm looking at him. And so it's a bit perception as well. And how you... In time, because over the next couple of years, when I go to Millwall, all of a sudden you're halving people and you're aggressive and things. So it's how you start developing all that and you have belief. But that all comes through an apprenticeship at Falkirk.
That was the first time I had seen Cochrane yesterday. I was at the game. And it's a huge compliment to him because...
How'd that go for you?
He never looked like a young player. He never looked like a young player. You know, he just looked like, obviously physically he's not developed. But in terms of as a footballer, he looked like he belonged on the pitch. He had a lot of the wee extra things that you can see. The wee doggedness, he's definitely got a wee bit about him, which is good. And I hope that there's a lot more like him coming. But I fear there isn't, because I've not seen them anywhere else. Mm-hmm. There's one or two here and there, but we still need to get that into their game.
And I suppose the test as well, as we've touched on earlier, is 16 great, but it's that 16 to 20. Has he got enough about him to go and get the 100-120 games under his belt?
But Mark, see, after yesterday, listen, the thing is, it all boils down to the individual, Mark. Mm-hmm. You know, if you get a belief, It looks as if Craig's going to actually start adopting these kids, you know, and putting them in, because see if these kids were a wee bit indifferent and from last week up until the end of January. All of a sudden, Hearts are going out, they're going to try and trade players, they're going to try and get a few out the door, they're going to try and bring in the season pro. You know, but I wouldn't say Big Craig's been blessed with bringing through a lot of kids over the years, but they've got a wee core there, and the wee boy Moore as well on the wing was lively the other night. So you've got three kids just breaking through, and I think Hearts have made a conscious effort to start reinvesting when they're obviously going through their troubles into the youths, and it's paying dividend. And I think if you can complement, and I was saying about St Mirren earlier on, they have done it over the years where they've complemented their first team senior players, and they've always managed to bring in McLean, McGinn, Lewis, Morgan's one of the best talents about in Scotland at the moment, Kyle McAllister from St Mirren. So if you can incorporate that into your model as a club, and they're good enough, it's great, because the punters buy into it as well.
Just before we leave this subject, and you mentioned Lewis Morgan, both you guys worked with him at St Mirren, is he the real deal?
I would say at the moment he certainly looks like he's getting close to being something special. I have to give Alec huge credit with both of these players, because the very first day he saw Kyle McAllister training, he just thought he had something special, and he brought him over to train with the first team at 16 and then gave him his debut at Ibrox. So he obviously seen something very special in him. Lewis Morgan had only played, I think, had only started two games in the season that we arrived there. We'd seen he had something, he had real genuine pace, but he was a bit lightweight. Mm-hmm. He could play in both wings, and you never really knew what his best position was at that time, and he got an injury. And he was out for about 2 months, I think it was, maybe a wee bit longer. And when he came back for the injury, he had bulked himself up. He'd went and done a lot of personal training, and he was really, really big.
Chiseled to Billy yourself, Mark.
And all of a sudden, when we put him back in the team, before you know it, guys who were brushing him off the ball, he was actually knocking people out the way. And it's got him even quicker as well, the fact
more
he's
powerful.
Got a physique like a sprinter. He's got huge potential, but you need to remember at the moment that he's still only playing in the Championship. So he's got a big step up to make. I know there are people talking about potentially Celtic and Rangers being interested in him, and I'd imagine if that's the case, then your Aberdeens and Hearts and things like that will maybe be trying to nick him as well.
As I'm hearing that Premiership clubs, Championship down the road as well.
Aye. So there's a lot of clubs interested in him. That next move will be the key thing for him, because if he goes, for example, to the Premiership, he's no ready for that in England.
Yeah.
And that could then make him disappear for 2 years. If it's possible, maybe come back and get a loan deal here, or go to the Championship down there and try and survive down there. It's a difficult one for him, because I'm not convinced he's ready for the top level yet, but he's certainly ready for a good move.
I take it in terms as well, just having worked with him and identifying his assets early on, he's a good kid as well. He's also got talent, but a good young lad as well.
Mark, all the things that we are talking about is about the character of people. Faz touched upon it. See, when he got injured, he actually went and done something about, he obviously identified it, you know, he's a wee bit spindly. And then when he came back, seriously, when he took his top off, you think, woofed, he's actually had a right go there. And that has actually given him the power which you need to be a modern day footballer, because he had the pace. But Faz is saying, I seen him playing against England. You know what, like England are, you know, 20s, 21 level. They always produce phenomenal footballers. And the first half, Scotland were inept. They were getting overrun. They couldn't keep the ball. In the second half, Morgan was by far, and I mean by far, the best player probably on the park, and the impact he was having, he gave the right back an absolute hiding that night, and that would have brought him onto the radar, because like Faz says, is when you're in the Championship, there's always be that scepticism about the level. Mm-hmm. But when you're actually doing it against guys, I think the right back was a Liverpool player that night, all of a sudden you're on people's radars.
He is a lovely kid, very grounded, he's got a great attitude.
Brilliant, good to hear it. That was interesting, I loved that bit. We can just move on to the next topic. Just going to touch on old Louis van Gaal, who's been saying this, but he'd love to get back into management, but if it was in England, only another Premier League team, so he could get one over the Old Trafford club. Obviously still kind of bitter about the way it all ended for him, although some would point to, you know, yeah, what goes around comes around in terms of how he got the job when David Moyes was still there. Can you understand the mentality and Van Gaal's perspective?
Faz is not like that, but I'm bitter.
I think, nope. I just hide it better, that's all.
Oh, no, listen, the thing is, it's people always say that. It's interesting, there were some really good people at St Mirren, and in other teams in which we've lost our job. So you get Big Campbell, was doing things. Campbell Kennedy was a commercial guy there, and he done some stuff for us that you couldn't actually say in the podcast because it was great. It allowed us to get a footballer in, and you couldn't thank these guys enough. Little Lynn, who was a ticket lady, that was her main job. She was to sell tickets. She ended up doing contracts and things because of the cutbacks at the club. Mm-hmm. And these people are the actual infrastructure of the club. And so you want them to actually do well. You know what I mean? In terms of the I could tell you some stories, but you know, but the dynamics of the some of the stuff with the chairman. But that will wait for another day. Eventually, somewhere down the line, you'll catch me in a moment. But listen, you always want them to get back to where they are. St Mirren's a decent sized club. They're a decent club. And if I say this often enough, then, you know, they might give me a break in social media.
I think it's part of your mentality, isn't it? When you're a winner, you feel as though you're hard done by, especially if you feel as though you didn't necessarily deserve to be sacked. And that makes it difficult. Sometimes you feel as though you maybe deserve a wee bit more time. You know, you feel as though that maybe the job that you had done in the previous year or the previous season would allow you a wee bit more time, but circumstances dictate at clubs and supporters dictate at clubs a lot. But no, I can definitely understand that mentality. I think certainly my mentality and his mentality as a winner, if you're wronged, you always feel as though you want to try and get back at them. I think that's just a natural thing, a natural instinct for a winning human.
Listen, there's no loyalty either. I got offered a job after 6 or 7 weeks as well, which was, substantial money. For what I was getting offered at St Mirren, and I went to see the board, and it was it was phenomenal money, and I said no. So you're thinking to yourself, where's the lawyer? Nothing was ever published at the time. Mm-hmm. And yet you know you get hounded out the door after 6 league games. It's hardly anything at all. And but listen, we just need to move on, see what the future brings.
Are you hoping to get back in together?
Listen, you don't know, Mark. I've been offered a couple of jobs. Different roles. I got offered a job about 7 weeks ago, and I said no because it wasn't right. The money wasn't right. I mean, I had to travel up and back and forth away for the family, and I'm at that stage now. I'm thinking, right, okay, if it's an opportunity, because I've taken jobs that were, you know, you're looking at some of the jobs we've taken. We went to Notts County, and I think there's what, 3 managers that year, Faz, before we got there. So there was a culture of just 5 minutes out the door, and then we went to Blackpool, who historically, Cal Oyston is, you know, well known in football for being extremely difficult. And then the St Mirren one as well. You know, a part of the when I first went in with the agent was, he says, listen, there's going to be a takeover. Hopefully part of that will be that you'll get money and all that, and be able to build, and, you know, we'll be able to throw some money at the training ground because the AstroTurf and all that was knackered. And then it doesn't materialise like that. So you're going to get false promises getting into jobs. So if it's no right, then I'm not going back in. That's as straight and simple as that.
What about you, Dave?
I think I'm in a very similar situation to Alec. I've obviously got the taxi now, so I can work, you know, and that was one of the main reasons that I started doing the taxi, because football management coaching is so fragile. You know, you're 6 months in work, 6 months out of work, 9 months in work, 6 months out of work, and it just becomes an endless cycle. So it was important to me, obviously having family and kids and stuff like that, that knowing that the next time that I got the sack, at least I could go to work on the Monday morning. Mm-hmm. So that's there now. When I see some of the stuff that goes on in the game, and when I hear about some of the things that happen, it's not a particularly nice game to be involved in at times. But the desire is always there to show that you could actually do something and make a difference. I think it would have to be a decent job or a decent opportunity that came up. The likelihood of that is probably minimal. So looking at getting back in at the moment, it's no looking too likely. Could I say no if I was offered a decent job? I doubt it.
What do you think now of management? You've been involved for more than a decade on and off, and a lot of kind of modern perceptions is about buzzwords and philosophies. I mean, how are there too many chairman and chief execs sucked in by all that stuff rather than just about the fundamentals of the job?
What is it, tactical what? Periodisation.
It seems to be the case.
No one of these are all laughing. The
there are a hell of a lot of interviews that you see these days, and I find that almost everyone's saying the same things. All the coaches and all the guys that's all coming out, and all the modern, they've been to all the courses and all the philosophies and all the stuff that's coming out. It's all the same buzzwords that you hear every week. And it actually comes down to, see, when you actually look at and you analyse as we do on a daily basis, and we phone each other back and forward and send each other articles, and when you actually analyse a lot of the jargon that's spoken, you can break it down to very simple, basic football tactics or tactic sayings that you've used for years and years, but they've just been bypassed now. And it's as you say, it's all the buzzwords. And it may well be that chairman are phoned for it. But is it any good for the game, though? Are we improving any? I don't think so.
How important is it to do a PowerPoint presentation when you're going for an interview now as well? Because you hear all that.
Yeah, well, Mark, to be honest with you, see, when I done the pro licence, my computer skills were pretty much no great. You could send an email, you surf the net and all that stuff. The pro licence was great. I went in and done a presentation similar to the boardroom here at the SFA and all the financial side of things and budgets, and that allowed me to do that. And on the back of that pro licence, I ended up going and doing match reports. So I was going to do match reports, PowerPoints, where the strengths and weaknesses were when I was at MK Dons. Because when I left to go to Blackpool with Ince, Big Cal Luck wanted me to stay at MK Dons with him, and he says, you know, it'll be a kind of coaching role.
Cal Robinson
role.
Wanted you to stay.
He did do, yeah. But the thing is, I ended up going up the road to Ince. The logistics were better to get back to Scotland as well to see the family. And it was on the back of, the kind of laptop side of things. So we are able to do all that stuff. It's not as if, and one of the things that's been probably driven by the media as well, it's like the dinosaur and the things. Football hasn't changed. It hasn't changed at all. You know, you might see people doing a high press or drop naff, but they're all talking about it's a low press and a high press. It's just all a different language, but it's the same meaning.
It's
just a press.
It's pressing, that's what it is.
So, but the thing is, so in terms of, listen, I think we're able to put a PowerPoint together. I think that's
important, actually, to kind of pick up on that, what Alex's saying there. We both, at all the clubs that we've worked at, have embraced the whole
technology.
Laptop thing and the technology and all the nice... You know, it looks great when you put it up in front of the players and you show them where you want them to be and what you want them to do and all the rest of it. But we can't get away from the actual basic core of football.
Yeah.
You know, your shape, your formation and your desire to win. And that's what it's all about. That is genuinely what it's all about. We have embraced all the modern stuff as much as we possibly can, and we've used it as much as we possibly can. But it doesn't become the most important thing in your game. And I think that's what's happened with a lot of clubs. A lot of clubs are now seeing that development and that modern technology is actually taking over, and the game's getting played up on the board rather than getting played out in the pitch on a Saturday.
But we see, just to take you back 10, 11 years ago, when we were at Dundee, there was Dick Donnelly's son Ian. Mm-hmm. He developed a big Dundee fan, and he developed software, and it was tremendous. And we actually started incorporating it into part of our weekly training. We would do debriefs with it. We would have cameras on the 18-yard line to see where the lines were at goal kicks and things, and who was deeper. And it was there. And even Derek McInnes adopted it up at St Johnstone after they found out that we were actually using it. So all the things, all the ingredients, we had a psychologist up at Dundee as well, mm-hmm. didn't we, Faz? Mm-hmm. We managed to kind of get a good deal with this guy who, for the Institute of Sport, we were doing body fats. This is all 11 years ago. Yeah. So all the things that people talk about, you know, it's just about putting things in front of people. We had the heart monitors, everything. Mm-hmm. And it's so much so that I ended up buying them out of Graves, didn't I? Yeah. I bought about 20 monitors because I just wanted them to get the same level of stuff that I'd learned at Rangers. And then it was just trying to put that professionalism in your deal.
It's a myth that the so-called dinosaurs don't buy into the modern technology. You know, we do all the same kind of things as all the modern guys are doing as well.
But the only thing we didn't have was the resources.
Money.
Yeah, because you end up having to do it all yourself, and that's the tiresome thing. So see, when people say it's 24/7, even at St Mirren, on a Sunday I would watch the full game. I'd take all the pros and cons and I would present it on a Monday. But an hour and a half game is not an hour and a half, because you're rewinding, you're trying to see it three or four times, you're saying, right, okay, what do we see? So you're trying to take all that information, and then you're thinking, what do I present to the group, and what do I present individually, because I don't want to keep fronting Mark Guidi because he can't hold the ball up.
Well, just on that, when you're talking about resources, we've just seen that traffic warden hovering over the taxis. I don't want to see you 30 quid lighter, so we've got five minutes to go. The last few minutes, last week, kick of the ball here in the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground. Just to touch on Stoke v West Ham, Marko Arnautovic helped West Ham to a 3-0 victory for Davy Moyes' team. And I don't know about you guys, but I thought it was refreshing to see a guy celebrating against his former club. Where do you guys stand on that?
I've got a belt off you, right? I left Millwall in 1996, and I goes up to Millwall's obviously famous for, their fans are a wee bit lively, to say the least. And I joined Wolves for 1.2 million from a Premiership club. And then when I get there, they had about 7 or 8 wins in the bounce. You know, so I'm thinking to myself, so I'm on the bench for about 3 games. I think this is an absolute nightmare. I end up playing in the Derby game, the next game started. Next game is a midweek game against Millwall. 92nd minute winner, and Faz will tell you, the way I used to celebrate is if I'd won the World Cup, right, and I'm running towards the Millwall fans, and I can just see all their faces all screwed up, going, I'm thinking, what am I doing?
Where are you, the Den or Molyneux?
No, I'm at Molyneux, but there's about 2,500 of them. So it's a midweek game, 2,500, they travel in good numbers, and I'm running towards them. And the whole 6 years, top scorer 3 times, out the window in 2 minutes of madness. So I went back down to the Den later on that year, man. Oh, they absolutely terrorised us. So I know Tivich has got a lot to answer for.
What do you think, David?
Well, I never scored many goals, so there wasn't many times I managed to get celebrating. But I have to say, if I had scored against any of my old teams, I would have celebrated. Absolutely no question. I would have loved to have scored against one of my old teams. I just think it's your natural thing. As you score a goal, it doesn't matter who it's against. You want to celebrate it. I know there's a respect thing, but I think the opposition fans respect you more for celebrating the fact that you've scored a goal. Yeah. Certainly know that your fans do. I know my fans would expect me to celebrate if I scored a goal.
Because you could flip it round and say, well, you've not been disrespectful to your own employers and your own set of fans by not celebrating.
Of course. Listen, see, the thing is, I think it's all down to personal thing. Mate, just when I seen it hit in the back of the net, it was just a natural reaction for me to start celebrating. And I loved it. It was the best feeling in the world. Now, see, if you like to flip things around about, see if he tackles someone and caught them in the follow-through. That was mere, like, he was up.
That was a goal for me.
If he was hoffing somebody in the follow through.
I actually seen something like that yesterday. I can't remember what game it was. When I came back for the game, I watched some of the highlights last night. It was one of the Scottish games. I think it was Ross County.
Was that Hamilton, Ross County?
Ross County, Hamilton. And the guy's put a block in the last seconds for a... He's through the goal. He's going to score. And I was actually thinking, that's a goal.
Yeah,
see
right.
That there? That block is a goal for me. Because he's made his team win the game there. But the strikers that score the 3 goals, they've got all the plaudits. See the centre-half that blocked that shot in the last minute? A brilliant block. That's a goal. I'd be celebrating that. I'd be in the stand.
Finally, just back to that Stoke-West Ham game. I don't know if you spotted it on Match of the Day, but Mark Hughes has given Arnautovic pelters as he's come off the pitch. David Moyes has subbed him. He's got the standing ovation for the West Ham fans. Stoke fans are going tonto, and Mark Hughes is in the touchline, giving it to him tight. As well, what do you think of that when a manager's getting involved?
Oh no, listen, I always try and see what you're talking about, sledging. I always used to try and get in people's heads. So if you were on the touchline, there was an opposition player missed touch, I'd just leave him on the boys, hopeless, you know. And it was really just to try and get in people's heads so they're concentrating on me more so than what they were actually kind of performing. So I'm very much for it.
I think a manager like Mark Hughes shouldn't be getting involved in it, but if it was me, I'd be getting involved in it.
So it's a thumbs up for Matt Hughes. Good one, am I?
It's like we've touched upon, it's your nature. It's, you know, and the thing is, there'd probably be a decorum where you shouldn't really get involved with what's going on in the pitch, and you don't. But it happens all the time, Mark. You know, people just say a wee word at the side. You actually see managers covering their mouth now because they're saying things to people. You see players laughing and things. So it's just part of the culture.
Well, listen, we've had a good laugh today as well. It's been really serious and some great points made about the game. So, Alec Ray, Davey Farrell, thank you very much for joining us on the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground. We'll be back next week with more guests. But once again, Alec, thank you.
Cheers, Mark.
Davey, thank you.
Welcome.
We appreciate your company and your insight. Cheers.
Brilliant.